Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Allison Bektesh.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. The Winter X Games returns to Buttermilk for the 16th year.
People took to the streets and the slopes in protest of President Trump's inauguration.
Some in Battlement Mesa are riled up about the thought of injection wells by their drinking water.
And the town of Carbondale chooses a new trustee.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition. Citizen groups in Battlement Mesa are fighting an application to put an injection well near their drinking water supply. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy has the details.
Earlier this month, the contractor Battlement Mesa Partners asked Garfield County to allow zoning for an injection well in a residential neighborhood. Injection wells are used for disposal of wastewater generated from fracking. Three citizens groups in the area are concerned about protecting the health of the water supply. The Colorado Oil and Gas Commission approved permits for two well pads in the Battlement Mesa neighborhood last fall, but those permits do not include injection wells. Garfield County is accepting public comment through Thursday, January 26. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy from the Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Garfield County is accepting public comment through today, and the issue will be heard by the Garfield Planning and Zoning Commission on February 8th at 6 p.m.
Carbondale's Board of Trustees spent hours Tuesday night vetting candidates for their vacant trustee seat. They landed on a Carbondale native.
The board chose Erica Sparhawk to serve as its seventh trustee. Her term will last about a year. Sparhawk grew up in Carbondale and currently works as a program manager at CLEAR, which is a nonprofit that works in energy efficiency. She emphasized her experience working with town and county officials for her current job. The town received 8 applications for the seat. 1 candidate dropped out, 1 didn't show, so the trustees interviewed 6 candidates about things like affordable housing and preserving the town's diversity. 5 trustees voted in favor of Sparhawk. Marty Silverstein abstained.
There's mixed reaction to the Trump administration's freeze of Environmental Protection Agency awards and grants and what that means for Colorado. Benta Berkland has more.
In a statement, Governor John Hickenlooper says it's not clear how broad the order is or for how long it will last. Democratic Senator Matt Jones of Longmont is the point person in his caucus for energy and climate change issues.
Any administration can come in and review this kind of stuff, but to shut things down and to censor employees, I've not seen that.
The EPA was also told not to communicate with the public through social media or press releases.
I think it's a great timeout.
Republican Senator Don Corum of Montrose says everyone wants clean air and water, but sometimes the EPA can be a detriment.
Because you can't have a healthy environment without a healthy economy.
State agencies didn't want to talk on the record, saying they still need more information from the federal government to figure out next steps. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Aspen's, quote, most progressive ordinance, unquote, was passed by City Council Tuesday night as part of the many changes to the land use code coming out of a year-long development moratorium.
Aspen Mayor Steve Skadron praised the work of the Community Development Department for creating an ordinance that considers alternative transportation alongside parking requirements for new developments. Previously, parking rules and mobility rules were separated. Ordinance 32 combines them. Now, instead of providing new on-site parking, a developer could choose to provide a form of shared parking, bicycle parking, or put money into public transportation.
It indirectly addresses entrance to Aspen needs in a way that nothing, a few things have.
Council believes that reducing parking availability while simultaneously increasing support for ride shares, bikes, hotel shuttles, and public transportation will reduce the number of single-occupancy vehicles in Aspen. Bert Myron was the dissenting vote, worried that decreasing parking requirements will stress an already overtaxed parking environment.
I guess one of the most controversial ones that came up not long ago was Base 1, which then submitted a parking plan. And if this were there, that garage may not be there, and those cars then would be where?
Also last night, council unanimously approved an extension of the moratorium through mid-March, a technicality that will allow the 30 days required for the ordinances to become law before land use applications are accepted again.
This week, Aspen hosts the Winter X Games for the 16th year. Allison attended the opening day press conference yesterday and found out this year brings new events along with traditional competitions.
The face of X Games television host Brandon Graham introduced the panel of skiers, snowboarders, and snowmobilers ready to jump, flip, and twist over the next 4 days of competition at the bottom of Buttermilk Mountain.
We're going to blow the roof off this year. I'm more excited for this one than I can remember. When you think about the new events.
Those new events include Women's Big Air for both skiing and snowboarding, and Snow Bike Cross. Snow Bike Cross is a bicycle frame with skis on the front and snowmobile tread on the back. The Women's Big Air will take place on the same 80-foot jump as the men compete on. The women's event was recently added to the Olympic lineup and will debut in Korea in 2018. Not only have the top X Games athletes set impressive records for medals year after year here in Aspen, many of them are Olympic medalists. With the Winter Olympics around the corner, perennial X Games gold medalist snowboarder Mark McMorris was asked how the two events match up.
I don't think I would go out and say one's more important than the other, but your grandma cares a little bit more about the Olympics. I think the only difference is that it comes around once every 4 years. It's definitely a really important event, but so is X Games. Your prime time ESPN, you want to do your best, and it's always the best riders, best courses. They stack up pretty evenly in my books.
The full slate of competitions and entertainment runs through Sunday. Allison Bechtesh from the X Games.
Pitkin County is 5 months into the construction of a whitewater park in Basalt. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy took a tour of the site and brings us this update.
Welcome to the bottom of the Roaring Fork River. We're standing in the middle of it.
Jason Carey is the river engineer at River Restoration in Carbondale. He's overseeing construction of two wave features in the Roaring Fork, just upriver from downtown Basalt. The Roaring Fork has been dammed for months above the construction site, and water is being diverted through a side channel. Carey says they are on track to open the river to boaters with the spring runoff, but there have been delays. In late December, an ice dam in the river broke and flooded the site.
The flooding of the site wasn't too bad, but what that did was create a 3-foot layer of frozen ground that was very difficult to work with. And so that slowed down the project a little bit.
Colorado Parks and Wildlife requires that work in the river is completed by mid-March when rainbow trout spawn. About 90% of the structures and construction will eventually be underwater, so crews will need to be out of the riverbed before levels start to rise. Crews from Diggin' It Riverworks Company have installed the concrete structures that will sit below the surface of the river and form the waves. They have also made progress on stabilizing a section of the bank that collapsed in a flood in the mid-90s. The Pitkin County Healthy Rivers and Streams Board has been working for about a decade on securing the rights for a recreational in-channel diversion, saying this project will keep water in the river. Carey says the work will improve the health of the Roaring Fork.
We will successfully protected flow rates in the river. I think water is probably the number one measure of health of a river.
Carey and Pitkin County hope to complete the entire project, including restoration of the riverbank and the staging area, by the beginning of May. There are still details to work out with the town of Basalt regarding access and improvements on Two Rivers Road. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy from the Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Jennifer Smith is an immigration attorney in Glenwood Springs. For more than a decade, she's helped immigrants from all around the world navigate the complex world of immigration law. While she has clients from China and Great Britain, most are from Mexico and Central America. She represents everyone from toddlers to grandparents. She recently spoke with Wyatt about being an immigration attorney in the era of President Donald Trump.
With the election results, there was a lot of panic from all over the place as far as how will the laws change? How will this impact me? What do I do about my children? And then it kind of died down with the holidays. People focused on family. And then now at the inauguration, there has been definitely a rush of people that want to deal with their processes now. There's also been an increased amount of families who maybe have been dragging their feet on family-based petitions who are eager to get them in before there are any changes in the law.
Even if there are, you know, these federal policies, what leverage do states have?
I think the role of the states in all of this is limited. The states can come into play in a couple of different ways. One is addressing whether or not the state's going to use state and local law enforcement resources in order to enforce immigration enforcement policy. Is that really how you want to be spending your taxpayer dollars?
How are you feeling about being an immigration lawyer over the next 4 years?
I think that it's nice to know that I'm in a position to help. It is also worrisome. I am worried that my job is going to change from helping people gain a benefit to documenting civil rights abuses or fighting detention.
Nothing has happened yet. I mean, there's been a lot of talk. And are there ways that policies can be debated and they can be...
There is a large element of our immigration process that is discretionary. And what that means is that the agency itself and the individual officers within that agency have the ability to exercise discretion on any case at any time. That can work positively, and that can work negatively.
Have you had any clients that have given up or just, you know, left?
Yes, unfortunately. We have our first case where this week where a client, we tried every discretionary thing we could do, and we lost on all of them, and he gave up and is being deported.
That was immigration attorney Jennifer Smith speaking with Wyatt.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Wyatt Orm. To stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook, find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, or follow us on Instagram. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station. Communities across Colorado are working to understand how climate change might affect future water supplies. University of Colorado researcher Jeff Lucas will present as part of a local environmental speaker series this week. He told Elizabeth Stewart Severy that the Roaring Fork Valley has seen fewer climate risks than elsewhere in the state.
I think of the Roaring Fork as having a little bit of a charmed climate and, you know, having some of the nicer conditions, a little less vulnerability to extreme drought. And the Roaring Fork, there's not as much variability from the wettest years to the driest years. I think the Roaring Fork Valley has also been maybe a little lucky in some ways with respect to, for example, flooding historically and in the last couple decades, as other parts of Colorado have seen a lot of destructive wildfires, you know, not as much in the Roaring Fork Valley.
Do you expect that kind of charmed climate, that luck, will run out?
Some of the things that are well loved about the climate will remain, you know, well into the 21st century. So I think where the luck might run out in particular would be with wildfire. All of the studies trying to project future occurrence of wildfire suggest major increases. Also, the incidence of beetle infestations and other causes of forest dieback are expected to increase.
So, Jeff, a lot of your work is at the regional level with water managers and other decision makers to prepare for a variety of climate scenarios in the future. How will a change in national administration impact that work?
That's a great question, and it's one that, you know, we've been concerned about since the election. I think the reality is that it's almost like there's two kinds of climate change conversations. One is at the national to global level related to greenhouse gas emissions. Then there's this other, more the more local and regional manifestation of climate change. It's very focused on, you know, adapting to the change that we can't avoid and preparing for what comes in the future. I don't expect a whole lot of change in that. That's going to go on. There's momentum. There's a lot of, you could say, grassroots motivation for that kind of work. There may not be as much federal support for it, but I see the states already really pushing back on the expected changes at the federal level.
That was Jeff Lucas, who's a researcher with the Western Water Assessment, which is affiliated with the University of Colorado at Boulder. He's in the Roaring Fork Valley this week as part of the Naturalist Nights speaker series. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy at the Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Lucas speaks at 7 o'clock tonight at Hallam Lake in Aspen. To hear more of this conversation, go to aspenpublicradio.org.
A measure that would encourage schools to offer more gun training for security guards and could pave the way for more teachers to have guns in schools cleared its first committee on Tuesday. Benta Berkland has more on the controversial measure at the state capitol.
Supporters of Senate Bill 5 are adamant that this legislation won't put more guns in schools. Instead, they say it would simply allow school employees to take a handgun safety training course from a county sheriff, since sheriffs are already involved in emergency school response plans.
Who better to offer this training and just help work with the school district to decide what should be involved in that training?
Senate Majority Leader Chris Hulbert from Parker is sponsoring the legislation.
If there are people who work in the schools, teachers or other staff, who want to be armed, then this would also contribute to them being trained.
Right now, Colorado has a statewide ban on firearms in K-12 schools. Law enforcement and private security are the exceptions. Some school districts get around that rule by allowing teachers and other staff to work as, quote, private security, so they can conceal carry in the classroom. Hulbert says schools aren't required to report that information.
For people who come through this program, they wouldn't have to be hired as private security.
And that's the sticking point for people who testified against the proposal in the Senate State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee. Arvada mother Jerry Barella doesn't believe any amount of training could make guns safe in schools. Her son was accidentally shot by a friend at a party. She says a training course won't correct human behavior.
Until there is a gun training course that will guarantee us 100% that a teacher or principal or other person will never have a bad day, will never have a lapse of good judgment, will never react impulsively to a student's misbehavior or disrespect, we cannot allow this bill to pass. It is the open door to more tragedy.
Even if it passes, the bill isn't mandatory, so school districts wouldn't be required to offer the training. Hulbert says while he wants to encourage more training, he doesn't want to force it on school districts.
I really want to be a champion and respect local control when it comes to our school districts.
But that doesn't comfort Ken Toltz from Boulder. He's with the nonprofit group Safe Campus Colorado, a gun violence prevention organization. He calls the measure a new twist on a bad idea.
Every year, the sponsor of these bills present zero data, zero evidence, and zero examples of the need or demand for this risky and dangerous experiment in school security. How many parents are here today promoting more concealed guns be carried by civilians into their child's school?
However, former high school teacher Ronald Dietz of Littleton thinks having more concealed carry holders would make schools safer. He says civilians have stopped mass shootings and gun-free zones don't work.
We love our kids, we want to protect them, and we want an effective means, and more training only makes that better. Training does work.
While Republicans on the committee all voted for the measure, Democrats, including Senator Lois Cord of Denver, were against it.
I disagree that more guns in schools makes our schools safer. And making a statement by passing this law seems to me to say that's what we believe.
That ideological difference is the main reason gun issues at the Capitol become so heated and partisan. So while the measure will easily clear the Republican-controlled Senate, it's likely to be defeated in the Democratic House. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Allison Bechtesh. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Also online, you can sign up for Aspen Public Radio's new Fork-Fed digital newsletter. Fork-Fed comes out every Friday, updating you on the week's news in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond.
A 1,000 people took to the streets and slopes on Saturday in Aspen as part of a nationwide show of solidarity. The group ski and march through town came on President Trump's first day in office in response to divisive campaign rhetoric. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy was there and brings us this report.
Joy, peace, love! Aspen rises above!
Nine-year-old Avery Master skied at the front of the pack Saturday, leading hundreds of riders down Aspen Mountain. With her mom, organizer Kim Master, at her side, she also led the chant, Joy, Peace, Love, Aspen Rises Above. Master says that message of positivity, more than protest, was the purpose of Aspen's complement to the Women's March on Washington. this one involving skis.
You know, you take your kid by the hand and you show them how to stand up for themselves and stand up for others and just be part of a caring, thoughtful community. So I'm excited to take Avery's hand here and march up the mountain, ski down with her.
Activists ranging from seasoned feminists to preschool children gathered at the Aspen Art Museum Saturday morning to craft signs to wear down the mountain. Olivia Oxenhorn is a high school senior.
It's so cool to have that multi-generational span and just come together as a community.
And the messages run the gamut.
We don't want your tiny hands anywhere near our underpants.
Treat everyone with respect.
Girls just want to have fundamental human rights.
Mountain women take the high road.
Women for wild lands.
Together we can love each other.
Climate change is not a hoax.
Protect our winters, protect our immigrants, protect our migrants, protect our rights.
I am a proud feminist since 1969.
Grandmothers are wise asses.
We are the Reese sisters.
We shall overcome.
Together we can keep animals safe.
As Kim Master helps her daughter pin a sign to her ski jacket, she says she's appalled by some of the language she hears from President Trump. There's a part of her that's angry, but
the good mom part of me is excited about doing something that's really peaceful and really positive, and I think that can be just as powerful.
And high school senior Callie Ferguson agrees.
I had a lot of fear and anxiety, and it feels a lot better just to be here. I feel a lot less powerless just knowing that I still live in a democracy and I still have a voice.
After Ski Patrol escorted close to 500 riders down Spar Gulch, they were met by a flood of protesters in a packed gondola plaza. In what may have been the largest demonstration in Aspen's modern history, men, women, and children clomped in ski and snow boots from the base of the mountain to Wagner Park. Shireen Sarek is marching in a pink hat with cat ears, a so-called pussy hat. The hats are a reference to President Trump's lewd comments from a 2005 Access Hollywood tape. Sarek says it's important to confront those vulgar statements.
Like in other points in history, you got to reclaim the word. You can't grab this.
Sarek says she's marching for women's rights and also climate action, education, and rights for all people. Trump's inauguration and the subsequent protests fell on the final few days of Aspen Gay Ski Week. Chris Bradford is here from LA for the 40th anniversary of that celebration, holding a sign that says,
I'm with her and her and her and her.
Bradford says he's here to show solidarity, and he's reassured by the large turnout.
It's so encouraging after what was a very dark day yesterday for many of us. I would like to see young people energized by this.
Across the valley, these protesters say they'll stay active. There's a new women's empowerment club at the high school, and women in Basalt have started a political action group called Indivisible Roaring Fork. But on this Saturday afternoon, they embody the values of a ski town and march to the bar for Opry. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio News.
Radio Tricolor is the only local Spanish-language radio station serving the whole Roaring Fork Valley. It plays music and reports the news, and it serves as a major resource for the Latino community here. Wyatt recently spent time with both listeners and the man at the station's helm.
At Valley Meats in Carbondale, the kitchen staff is on their lunch break. Four men sit in complete silence, staring at their phones. The radio plays in the background. Which station?
La Tricolor.
La Tricolor. And how often do they listen?
Siempre. Siempre.
Always. Always, says Abelardo Quintero. He likes the music they play from northern Mexico, but also that they switch it up and play dancier things like bachata. The news is important to him, too.
Sometimes they tell us how I-70 is, heading towards Denver. They bring us this kind of news, too.
Gracias por sintonizar La Tricolor, puros trancazos.
You can find it at 107.1. It's the most widely listened to Hispanic radio station in the valley. Here's the man behind it.
¿Qué tal? Los saluda Samuel Bernal y estas son las noticias. Hi, this is Samuel Bernal and these are the news. I am right now with Aspen.
The station is in Basalt. It's tucked away by the river. It's here that Samuel Bernal sits in front of two large computer screens preparing tomorrow's newscast.
¿Qué tal? Los saluda Samuel Bernal y estas son las noticias.
He's wearing a long black pea coat. There's a framed poster of the Beatles on the wall. A Woodstock poster is leaned against a chair outside. He's not sure where to put it yet.
Do you ever listen to like folk music, like American folk
music? Oh yeah, yeah, I love it. Mm-hmm.
Bernal has lived in the U.S. for the better part of a decade. He's originally from Mexico City. He studied at the oldest journalism school in Latin America and reported for a technology magazine in Mexico before coming to the U.S. Bernal and his colleague, Cristal Mariscol, are La Tricolor's boots on the ground in the Roaring Fork Valley. And a lot of people depend on them. In a study several years ago, La Tricolor's parent company, Intravision, found that radio reaches 93% of Latino consumers in Colorado's central Rockies. Accident on the highway, school district calls a snow day, Bernal and Mariscol report on it. But they do much, much more.
We get messages from people that said that, you know, I don't have a house right now, I lost the place I was living, and I have a kid, and I don't know where to go, and can you help me?
And they can help. They're connected to organizations around the valley. The station is a resource for listeners in this way. And listeners are a resource for the station. They constantly send pictures of snowy, traffic-ridden highways or car accidents other drivers should be aware of. Bernal posts them on the station's Facebook page. He also posts his own videos, like this one.
Another thing I recommend, and so do the police, is that you can use your phone to record them arresting you, but start it before they arrest you.
The video has 826 views. Another has over 1,100 views. It's a recording of the immigration forum Bernal organized at Glenwood Middle School in December. He estimates over 200 people were there. Immigration attorneys answered questions and extended their services, like Lisa York, who came from Denver.
So I have been an immigration attorney for 14 years.
La Tricolor is a bridge for the Latino community, says Bernal. He works to address what the community needs, what it's thinking about. But he wants to bring them into unfamiliar places, too. Take, for example, the station's collaboration with the Aspen Art Museum. Together, they put on four events each year called Arte en Español. For an afternoon, there are guided tours in Spanish at the museum. There's food and music and places to make art. Bernal has seen hundreds of people show up for this event. He thinks this kind of engagement is something unique to the valley. It also might have something to do with radio, he thinks. In his office, he's drawn a box above his desk. There's a longer story to explain why, which involves his favorite book, The Little Prince. But in a nutshell...
And I think radio is basically a box for imagination.
To be a bridge for his community, it's his imagination he needs to use each and every day. That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Wyatt Orm.
And I'm Allison Bektesh. To hear the show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. Allison talks with a panel of local journalists about this week's news.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.